Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. It's been quite a good week. I'm not quite sure why. Well, I know exactly why, and so do you, you cheeky little beggars. And to bring you on this brilliant ride, I've got to accompany me on this brilliant ride, I should say, is Ben Haynes. Haynesy, how are you doing,
hey,
mate?
Hey, hello, mate. How are you? What a week and a half that's been.
I know, right? I haven't recorded. I wasn't one of those people that was motivated and hardworking enough to do one post Arsenal.
I'll be honest.
So this is a big sandwich.
I was sat being like refreshing the feed because you're sort of my guy. Right, blow smoke up your ass now. You can take your headphones off for a second.
Yeah.
You bend over and tense up, sunshine. No, I'm always refreshing my feed as I'm about to walk to work in the morning, and I was sitting there waiting for it to drop. And you've had so many like good guests recently. I mean, you always have great guests, but you had so many sort of like coys royalty. I was like, right, who's it going to be that you've roped in for this one? And when there was no episode, I was like one of those sneaky like 12-year-old YouTube subscribers saying, drop the vid. But like nothing came through. I couldn't believe it. Absolutely fuming.
Sorry about that, mate. I'm sorry to anybody I've let down, but you all know the score by now as well. And it's also nice, yeah. To me, it's just my ego, mate. It's nice to just feel wanted. You know, to me, it's more validation for somebody saying, "You lazy piece of shit, where is the podcast?" As opposed to somebody just being like, "That was really good, mate. Nice
just
one."
Just on Twitter replying to people saying, "Go on, tell me I'm scum."
Yeah, exactly. Please, God, maybe it is something. This is something I should probably talk to a therapist about, I think.
Yeah, can I just say, I've really enjoyed, over the last few weeks, there's been some unbelievable corkers. Sentient Play-Doh was a particularly good one. I really, really enjoyed that. That tickled me a lot. There was a bit with Flav when you were talking about the nature of like the relationship with like the club and stuff. And I was like, God, this is just so sort of... And the same with Spooky, actually. You know how you could be having a conversation with those two and you can go existential really quickly.
Yeah, I do like it. The thing that's always good about doing it with Flav is it's either huge existential, thought-provoking stuff or willies. You know?
And, that's and the just, same with Ricky.
No,
well.
nobody does it like Flav on that front. But
oh, mate, it can go from 6 to midnight in about 2 seconds.
And yeah, I know. I think didn't you highlight the bit you particularly liked to the pod with Ricky was the revelation that I occasionally send him my prize turf outs as and when they occur.
It's true. Like, I mean, that is just such because you and I on WhatsApp we sort of converse quite a bit about just kind of like random stuff. It will just be sort of things that have like caught my eye or your eye over the course of the last like week or whatever. And you're like, mate, have you seen this? This is bizarre. But I'm so glad that I get that as opposed to it's a picture of a particularly large bit of action that I've had over the last 24 hours.
You know how Patreon's like a really big thing now. Maybe do you think there would be a market for
put it behind the paywall?
Yeah, exactly. Only fans as well. Put it behind the poo wall. You know. Like, maybe.
Oh,
I don't know.
God.
I wouldn't put it past the internet for it to be a thing for excrement photos to be an OnlyFans type thing.
Yeah, look, I mean...
Maybe I should try it.
Dangerously Shit. Close territory to you sort of sending your used undies to people on eBay. Like people coming in to buy your lovely pants.
Look, you know, I've got no shame, you know. Like, let's just,
I'll take anything.
Let's just do it. I mean... Right, let's we'll move away from this. This isn't the start anybody wanted. Like,
Can you imagine people that are like proper coys have come like, let's get into that Arsenal game, and 20 minutes in we're still talking about your dookies.
I'd hope by now people kind of know what they're getting from this. So it's shit, and you know, here you go. I mean, just like, come on, like the North London derby, just how absolutely glorious was that? I mean, seriously, I mean, could we even? I mean, the thing is, you know, it was almost quite disappointing, just how good we were and just how bad they were, which is, it's perverse. But we're so conditioned to expect this kind of nail biting, horrible end to end affair. But they just completely, I'm gonna say it already, mate. They bottled it. They absolutely bottled it.
I think it goes deeper than that as well. I think it goes a little bit deeper than that, is that they self-destructed. They didn't just kind of have a wobble. Like, the idea that Holding, who had fouled Son three times by the time he went for that elbow smash, hadn't sort of gone, maybe I need to rein this in. It was self-destruction. It was like, it was a strange thing that people sort of always use that term Spursy, which drives me up the wall, but I understand where it comes from, and I understand the idea that people are looking at Spurs when they're in really good positions to just kind of fall apart under pressure. I didn't think that Arsenal sort of didn't play well enough on the day. They actively destroyed themselves. It was really strange.
The funny thing is, you know, I think something that's propelled them on quite a lot, and one thing I would give Arteta credit for, is I do think he's managed to instill a kind of a core unity there. He's weeded out the players he doesn't particularly like, or, you know, he doesn't feel a part of the unit. Basically reminiscent of what Pochettino did in his early days. And there were some of those painful departures, your Aaron Lennons, your Michael Dawsons, players like that, that he just knew he couldn't rely on for whatever reason, got rid of them, and has managed to like instill this mentality there that, you know, the Arsenal and all that type of stuff that is disgusting for anybody outside of the club. But you can see the fans are bought into it, and a lot of the players are too. However, in that game, like you're saying, that kind of self-destructive side, it feels like that capacity to rein it in. And I guess that comes with partly with having a young squad, but I still think it's a young squad that it doesn't kind of have the humble origin story that Tottenham's did under Pochettino. If this is Tottenham kind of rags to riches, Tottenham coming from nowhere.
Yeah,
this is the Klaasenal. This is the, we're going to bring back the Wenger glory days. There's that kind of hubris, that ego about them that isn't endearing, really. And then I think manifests in, like you say, in games like that when they're like, well, come on, we got to do, this is a North London derby, so let's dive into challenges early doors. Let's go flying in with elbows. It's like, lads, like, it's a different game now. It's VAR.
It's such a misunderstanding, isn't it? It's such a misunderstanding of what it is to show passion, spelt P-A-S-H-U-N.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so not it in a North London derby. Like, you can do, there are so many other things that you can do to show intensity as opposed to clattering someone in the face. Like, it's just, I thought, to be fair, much as we've spoken about Arsenal, and just really quickly, I know you've touched on this before, the counter of that, having that ingrained in their DNA, is that Arsenal still can get over the line sometimes in the FA Cup, for example, because they can lean on that history here and there.
Yep.
But at the same time, coming into this one, I thought we handled the situation and we handled the occasion unbelievably well, and that was not just players and not just Conte, but I thought the fans handled it incredibly as well. Like, they knew what the assignment was from the moment that the game started. It was 90 minutes of singing with all fans on their feet. It was incredible. It genuinely did you see them, were you watching on Sky, did you see that shot they did of the tifo at the beginning?
No, well, I was there actually, but
yeah, not that matters.
Well, you know, yeah, just
actually,
it's
there,
what it is. Yeah. Like, I know you. Were you watching it on one of those streams or something that you get?
Yeah.
I saw the
Reddit soccer streams.
The video you shared though, mate, which was pretty, because I'll be cards on the table, I was definitely one of those ball bags before this. I've been like, why are we manufacturing this thing? Why are we doing this? Is like Leicester clappers. This is clubs shouldn't be doing this type of thing. But to be fair, I mean, the only, if I'm still to criticise it a little bit, dare dream do, as one of my mates said, is a little live, love, laugh. But
yeah, eat, pray, love. Yeah,
a little, but you know what? In situ, as they say, it was pretty class. It was pretty unbelievable. And
when you saw it sort of unfurl, it was like, oh wow, that stand is that we need to turn that into that stand that on big games, like when their team's attacking that goal, that you're like, we're going to score. We're just going to score.
And it did get the thing is, ultimately, like, you know, it can be a stick in the mud about this sort of stuff, or you can just realise that the game has changed and that people are kind of much more attuned to these aesthetics and appealing kind of things in that way, you know, that it's not all kind of spit and sawdust anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Clappers, don't you? You want clappers.
Although, do you know what? After mugging them off directly about it, I did kind of look at Newcastle's little flags last night and I thought, that looks fucking sick, actually.
Yeah,
St. James's Park looks... Do you know what I've got to say? Arsenal, in this run-up, have had two end-of-season games at two... Let's be honest, two of the country's better stadiums. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like... I mean, people can say whatever they want about Spurs, and I know the atmosphere might have dipped consistently over the past years as we've gotten a bigger club, but still, one thing I think we can hold on to is that we do still have one of the best supporters in the country, you know, and that really shows in games like that.
Do you know what it is, mate? I think we've got that really sort of interesting hybrid supporter base that, because we don't take ourselves sort of too seriously sometimes, like we sort of actively take the piss out of ourselves. Half the time people are like, oh, why don't Spurs fans sort of get behind the team enough? Why do they sort of need G'ing up? And then the other half the time, I just feel like fans totally get what's needed. Like against Arsenal, it felt like every single person that arrived into the stadium, there's so much criticism, isn't there, of the Premier League around, oh, it's become a tourist thing. People travel from all over the world to go and watch games and they don't really get it and they don't really understand it. And that, look, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with people coming from all over the world to support their team. In fact, like, it's a brilliant thing that it's so global now. But it definitely felt against Arsenal, there were 62,000 people there that were not going to move. They weren't going to budge an inch away from being unbelievably partisan and just being like, I'm going to sing for 90 minutes. And like, we're going to raise the roof. And do you know what's amazing is that, like, we're finally getting to that point where some of the old songs are coming back. You know, when the sort of stands are singing to each other, like, that just puts the hairs on the back of my neck. I love it.
I was saying this with Shah the other day, that like the whole Park Lane shelf side chant,
I love it.
It's just going to go forever. It has to. And we were sort of saying, does any other club do that? But I guess we wouldn't know because we probably don't know all the names of the different stands. And you just, other clubs sort of chants when you're watching it on telly, they just sort of meld into background noise, don't they? Because you don't know the exact words and stuff. Especially, I always say with Tom Foynes, there's this one, whenever you play at Turf Moor, whenever you play at Burnley, you just hit almost for 90 minutes. I think it's something like, play up Burnley, something like that, but it just sounds like, for 90 minutes. I cannot stand it. We'll get on to them, but...
It's just like a really shit version of Spanish Flea just going on in the background.
But... There was just so much to love about that game. And yeah, you know, you can sort of by the sort of 70th minute, sort of thinking like, is that it? It was almost like, you know, the Wizard of Oz peeking behind the curtain, being like, that's it, that's them. Pathetic.
It turns out they were just a bunch of bright lights put against a shadow.
Yeah, like, just, it was, you almost, honestly, felt embarrassed for them. And I don't really partake in this type of stuff unless there's some that are particularly nasty to me in the past. But I don't really partake in the whole like, woo, to like fans, like mates who are fans of Arsenal or whoever.
Yeah.
I just can't really be asked.
It's because we're
scarred,
isn't it? We've got PTSD from it happening throughout the 90s.
Yeah, that, and also I'm just like, You know, like,
yeah,
you,
totally.
You know, whatever. My club did the talking, mate. You know, that's that's it.
But how weird was it, mate? Sitting, like you said, in the 70th minute, sitting there being like, is this one finished?
Shall I go and get a hot dog? I don't know. You know, like, but it's, but it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. And still, when the final whistle goes, that, like, you did get the rush. You were just like, we fucking done. Like, they've showed up, like, they could have turned up that day and actually sealed the championship. They've got All or Nothing following them.
Oh.
We had our big TIFO. We had all this stuff, all the chat about Antonio Conte and all this. The narrative was there, though, for them, this plucky the Arsenal turning up at White Hart Lane like their teams of yesteryear did, winning the league at White Hart Lane. They could show up and seal the Champions League there in the first North London derby full of fans in the brand new stadium after we've done our TIFO and we've done all this pre-match hype about it, and they couldn't get it across the line. You know, they couldn't do it. And that feeling of just like, even if from that point on, even if now, even if from this point, they go on and get the Champions League, it'll be horrible. It'll be horrible to finish beneath them. But also knowing in that moment, we fucking had you, lads. Had you. And you know what the funny thing is? If you hadn't have actually gamed the system and run away from, you ran away from the North London derby in January. If you hadn't have done that, there's every chance you'd have probably beaten us then.
Yeah, could well have happened. By the way, I'm going to clip up that last minute and a half and use it as ASMR. Just like, inject it into my ears directly for the next 2 weeks. Well, unless anything happens that we didn't want to happen against Norwich. But, mate, can I just add something to that would just give
please,
you the biggest big
please.
Ball energy ever? I was really, really lucky on the game against Burnley. The players did their sort of walk around, and basically, as they were walking around, a couple of them just peeled off to come and do N17 after the game. And annoyingly, for Hugo Lloris's interview, I don't think his mic was working at 100%. But he said about Arsenal, he was like, yeah, on that night, we served them caviar.
We
served them caviar. How, like, that's proper sort of like, that's proper Poch standing in the change room, like screaming, making the big ball signal, isn't it? It's like just delicious, absolutely delicious.
I love you. I mean, what a season he's had as well, man.
Mate, and listen, I have to be completely honest. I have had those points after he like sort of smashed his arm in half against Brighton. I had the panic. I was like, is he going to be able to recover from that? It looked horrendous. Also, is he going to be able to recover from it in the sense that he's going to be confident coming for crosses?
Because he was also crapping that his form's awful leading up to that injury. You know, like,
how many times against Arsenal did he just go and pluck across at the sky and then just lie down on the ground for 30 seconds and just let us all get our breath back? That's such understanding of what's needed again in that situation.
But the funny thing is, like, one of the big things that he's been like really hammered for is his district. And I feel like even in the past year, that's gotten better.
That's improved.
Like, but everything you say, like claiming stuff, claiming balls against Burnley, he was like plucking them out the sky the other night,
it's
constantly.
So good.
He's just getting better at all the stuff he was never that good at.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, I don't know. He's, I know, what is he, 34, 35 now? He can play till he's 40, surely. You know, goalkeepers can.
Also, he's sort of, the fact that he said that he's sort of committed to helping bring the next goalkeeper through at Spurs, like him saying that I'm going to be here until I can get the next number one to come in and replace me, that you can't, it's very rare that I sort of give West Ham loads of credit, but you can sort of see why someone like Mark Noble has had the longevity he's had at West Ham. It's not because he's a phenomenal player. It's because they just want to have someone like Mark Noble in the background. Man City with Fernandinho and Vincent Kompany.
Henderson.
Liverpool with James Milner and Jordan Henderson. Yeah. Like, you need to have people that are driving standards off the pitch as well as on it. And the good thing for us with Hugo is that at the moment, his performance level has been phenomenal. Like, just the all I think for most football fans, it's not just Spurs fans, but most football fans, what they really want from a goalkeeper is someone that will be a 7 out of 10 most weeks, occasionally an 8 out of 10, but never a 4 out of 10. Never someone that just kind of lets one through their legs. Do you remember when we had Gomez in goal, right? He would often like do these miraculous saves and you'd be like, this guy is the absolute, he's mustard. and then he'd go and drop one through his legs, yeah, and you'd be like, oh, for God's sake, mate, what? Don't make the worldie save. I can deal with the one that's flying in the top corner. What I can't deal with is the one against Chelsea where he lets it through his legs. Well,
do you remember the one against Fulham when it just literally looked like he was daydreaming and the ball just kind of went past him? Like, it was like he wasn't paying attention to the game. And you just think, Premier League football, you know?
Just don't come out and punch Ledley King in the face instead of the ball. Like, just, do you know what I mean? And the thing is with Hugo is you're now getting all of that competence that he's got, all the experience that he's got, and then he's adding things in at 35. He's adding, his distribution's getting better, his claiming crosses is getting better. And even the other thing, I suppose, that we should probably kind of give some serious props to, when you've got someone like Eric Dier in front of you, who has been questioned a million times over, who now just looks totally calm and composed.
Looks like a man reborn.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Like, I don't even see or even think I want to replace him. No. You know? Like, I think he's... I don't know if you saw Christian Romero the other day said that his partnership with Dier is really important to him as well.
I didn't see that. What did he say?
It was just something along those lines that he feels he's built a really good partnership, understanding with Eric Dier.
You can see during games, like, Eric Dier is marshalling. Like, he is such a talker. It's one of the big things behind closed doors. He was the loudest player on the pitch. But now, I think there's a confidence that comes with the idea of being like, wow, we're really settled here. I think the back three went like 16 games or something, didn't they, before Romero got
injured. Even Gentle Ben. What a player. Like, playing in that left centre-back role. And to give him his props, Raj has been saying that from like 10 years ago. He's literally been saying, if Ben Davies played in a left centre-back role, part of a three, we'd see the best of him. Raj has like consistently said that. And I'd be like, bah, get rid of him, he's shit, you know. But now, look at him. And this is the main, I would say, the main thing, because I think there are some leaps at the moment about Conte. And I do want to talk about Conte more in depth a bit later on. But in terms of, like, you know, we wouldn't have done this under anyone else. Look at the mentality Conte's bred. Maybe. But I think one of the main things I think he's done, he seems to be a very pragmatic manager, right? And obviously the main thing he's realised is Tottenham's defence was whack. Like, when he came in, what was undermining us was just that terrible defence. But if anything, it's like one of the strongest elements of our team now. Like, when you're looking at those three centre backs, and if you look at even like what he's done to Doherty and Romero, Ryan Sessegnon for the past few, against Liverpool, against Arsenal, but the lad's been sensational.
Oh, I love
him. He's been absolutely, and I'm honestly so happy. Like, to see like a kind of lad that came with such a big reputation, who obviously, I mean, let's be brutally honest, wilted under the pressure of making that step up. Of, I don't know, he just never looked that assured. I think, funnily enough, I remember he played really well against Bayern Munich away.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
In the Champions League. Yeah, he did score as well, actually, yeah. And he just, I thought he had a generally really good game. And then he just never seemed to build on that. And I don't know, I think he had a fairly kind of lukewarm substitute appearance. But as somebody pointed out, actually, I can't remember on one of the pods, somebody pointed out, funnily enough, you know, he actually joined that team in Germany during COVID, during lockdown. He was in Germany on his own.
Just him and his missus and no other support network around him. I think he went first without her, and then she went out to join him. And like, we all know what we kind of experienced during lockdown. I really, really struggled with the idea of just not being able to go out and do the normal things you'd normally do. And the idea that you would then change your entire backdrop, your entire setup, all of the things you take for granted to go and challenge yourself. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for that, because it's almost forgotten. You know, when players go out on loan, I know there's a lot of Twitter accounts that will be like, oh, we're watching this guy on loan, and they'll kind of give you the updates. But I know I haven't watched, for example, Gio Lo Celso in huge depth outside of the Champions League. I've not seen much of Ndombele, for example, Brian Hill. Like, you probably have that feeling as a player as well, that you're out of sight, out of mind. And the way that he sort of embraced it, captured it, and then has come back. The thing that pains me with Ryan Sessegnon is that you know how good he was at Fulham. Like, you know how good he was in that season when Fulham got promoted. And he was as a left wing back, he was finding himself in the 6-yard box and scoring goals, and you could see that he wanted to take everything. I think he was maybe like 17 or 18 at the time.
He looked like Gareth Bale, didn't he?
Totally. Wanted to take all the penalties, the free kicks, the corners. Anytime anything big happened, they turned round and looked at him as their sort of source of inspiration, which for a 17-year-old or whatever it was unbelievable. And it just felt like over the course of this season, every time he's managed to get himself back into that headspace, he's got unlucky with an injury.
I don't think it's a bad problem for us to have Reguilón and Sessegnon both vying for that left side at all.
It's
and like you're saying, sort of like the culture of football now is it's very easy to just dismiss somebody, and we're all guilty of it. We're all guilty of it. And I think at the moment, obviously there's a bit of Reguilón's not up to much. He's obviously still a very good player. I think for me, the thing that I've noticed in Sessegnon, and Reguilón, he's a ballsier player, and I think he's more kind of self-assured and he's more full of himself, and that's obviously helpful in that position, the position that where you really have to probably be one of the ballsiest players on the pitch, to be honest, playing in a Conte system as a wing back. Tearing it up and down the pitch, being aggressive in attack and in defense, and just basically being able to go full throttle, and Reguilón's good at that, and I'll give him that. But the thing that I think Sessegnon has is I just think he's an overall smarter player. I just think he seems to be more aware of what his teammates are doing around him, of reading the game a bit better, and I just think his final delivery, especially in the past few games, we're starting to see it now. Now he is growing in confidence, and he is feeling that kind of self-assurance to just be like, right, actually, I'm in a sprint. Let's just whip across him. We've seen him do that a couple of times now, and He's good. And again, it's one of those things where you're like, maybe we don't have to spend 50 mil on the new wing back this summer,
Yeah, well, particularly on the left-hand side. I mean, it remains to be seen what happens in terms of the situation. Obviously, Reguilón's got the buyout clause and stuff like that. But down the left-hand side, like you said, it does feel like there's a competition there. And it feels like Sessegnon's ceiling is so high that if he can stay fit, there's so much potential that's been untapped there. I'd love to see him go on another level with his delivery. I feel like there's a...
And his finishing.
Yeah, I feel like there's a confidence thing there. Like, he's got it in the locker, and yet I feel like he'll get into advanced areas and you're just thinking, mate, just go at that player that you're playing against. You're quick enough and you're strong enough to do it. And for some reason, it's in the biggest games of the season that he's looked the most likely to do it. Against Liverpool, both times, he's been brilliant. Do you remember in the first game against Liverpool, he just absolutely pocketed Salah. Like, he made him look nothing. And then he managed to sort of get down the wing and he got a pullback for Harry Kane, who absolutely shanked one. We thought he's going to score here. But he seems to, I don't know why, he seems to just kind of come alive in these big games. You think, right, now do it for 38. Now do it over the course of the season and make Reguilón step up. And I think what you said about the battling for positions, that's what it needs to be across the board. We need to, Eric Dier is in a wonderful sort of sweet spot in his career at the moment, it feels. Ben Davis has performed really, really well over the last few games. You now need to slot in someone else who's going to challenge both of them. Not saying that they have to come in and replace them, but when you've got that competition for places, like, I think it elevates the level of the whole team. And you want to have that healthy competition. It's what the best sides in the league have. It's what Liverpool and City, at the moment, it feels like if a player drops off at all, they lose their spot for the next week, and then they're desperate to get it back. Like, I would love for Spurs to have that problem. I'd love for us this summer to go out and bring in another two or three players that you think should be in the first team but will have to battle for their spot to get in there.
Do you, just to sort of close off the Arsenal, well, it won't be closing off Arsenal yet because it's going to be a constant theme throughout all this, but in that game in particular, I mean, one thing that's been raised, one thing that I saw an Arsenal fan, and it wasn't in a... it was just in a Twitter sort of thread, and he wasn't even saying it in a kind of oh well way. He was just doing it in a more conciliatory way for their own fans, as in, like, one thing we can take heart from is that funnily enough, this is a Tottenham team now that is the more experienced of the two teams. It's a Tottenham team that, for a large part, has played in a Champions League. At least the linchpins of this team have played in a Champions League final, have had title races. You know, they've got Son and Kane. They got Hugo Lloris. You know, it's a good team. Whereas this Arsenal team is still, it's the youngest in the league, I think. And to be where they are is still pretty good. So, I mean, there's obviously a lot of knee-jerk from, especially the likes of our old mate Troops at the moment, who's been kicking off about Arteta and the like. But I still feel like he's doing a good job there. And I still feel like in the coming years, our kind of battle with them is, it's going to be more of a thing, right?
Or I thought your point to Flav was really interesting on this. The fact that, like, there's enough there to make you think this, it's not going away. You know, there's enough in that squad in terms of, like, the youngsters coming through that it's not, we're not going to see a return to the Arsenal that we saw 3-4 years ago. Do you know what I mean? When you just felt like, do you know, I don't recognise this side. It could be anything. You sort of felt like they could go and lose 3 or 4 games on the spin against some really dicey opposition. And to be fair, that has happened to them this season. But it's never felt like with a complete lack of identity. I have to be honest. I think, like you said earlier on, they came up against Spurs and Newcastle at the worst possible time. Newcastle on this brilliant run, and with the fans at fever pitch on a Monday night under the lights, you've got to travel 4 or 5 hours or whatever it is to go and try and pull something together there when you've just got hammered by your biggest rivals. That's rough timing. You know, that's really, really unlucky.
Unlucky!
But at the same time, you do sort of look at Arsenal's front 3 or 4. I mean, Nketiah probably will move on this summer, but you look at Martinelli, Smith Rowe and Saka in particular and think they're going to be there for a long time, and they're going to get better and better and better. And they'll probably, Gabriel and White are both very good centre-backs. They'll improve. Tomiyasu looks like a decent buy as well. Ramsdale's young and exciting as well in terms of the way that he approaches the game.
He's so Arsenal as well, isn't he? It's grotesque.
Arsenal. Yeah, right. Totally Arsenal. Tierney's obviously amazing, got injured. Yeah. Like, so they've got the structure of a very, very good side. The good thing for us is, like you said, we're in a sweet spot in terms of the players that we've got, and we do seem to be adding. Like I know Romero didn't play in the last two games, but I've got so much joy from watching this young guy come through and just completely get what the fans want.
Unbelievable. He's a general. Like, he's...
And yet so wonderfully talented on the ball as well.
Yeah.
Like, you then see him sort of, like, dance into the middle of the pitch and look so elegant on the ball off the back of having just smashed someone into row Z. Like, at times, I get a bit carried away with this sort of stuff, but at times I have to sort of, like, pinch myself and be like, we're lucky to watch this guy play. Like, we were lucky to watch Jan and Toby together, you know, but we've got another one of that sort of defender that... I think in 20 years' time, we're going to look back and be like, do you remember Coutinho Romero, how good he was?
He could, I mean, to me, he could be like a defensive kind of Modric. Like, I can probably...
Totally.
I'm not pissing, I'm just saying he's the sort of player I can see going to Real Madrid and becoming considered the best defender in the world. You know, like, he's got the lot. I mean, he could probably work on his aerial ability a bit if we're splitting hairs, but...
Particularly from set pieces.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's a kid. As a defender, to be as good as he is at his age, I think that's one of the things that people kind of... You know, sometimes when he had a few games where he was getting a couple of rash yellows and stuff, and people are like, oh, people, you know, he's not as good as everyone's making out. You're like, but he's like... in his early 20s, you know?
Yeah,
he's playing at this level. Virgil van Dijk wasn't playing at the level he's at till he was pushing 30, you know? Like,
mate, at Southampton, he was nowhere near the player that you...
Look what Harry Kane did to him when he was at Southampton just a couple of years ago, you know?
I don't know about you, I sort of... In my mind, when everyone was having that kind of semi-meltdown over Romero picking up cards, I'd kind of written it off. I was like, yeah, he'll probably get sent off twice this season, so what? Like, in my head, I was like, let him, don't try and turn him into something that he's not. But
his net good is far outweighed it, right?
Yeah, and yet, weirdly, his timing and his understanding of the Premier League has, over the course of 6 months, gone through the roof. Like, you know that challenge, was it against, who was it against, where he ran in and absolutely thumped someone and then just carried on and picked up the ball? It was only like 2-3 weeks ago, but my brain has gone to complete mush. But he ran in into a big 50-50 challenge, and he then went into another big 50-50 challenge. I think it was against Leicester. And then sort of charged on with the ball and then found the pass, and then we scored from it off the back. Yeah, it was against Leicester. I think it was Sonny's goal. It's such a risk to go into those challenges, but at the moment you just have such faith in him that he's going to go and win it. You know, you have such faith that he's going to go and win the ball and then do something meaningful with it. And what a blessing that is, to have a defender that can win the ball high up the pitch and then create a counter-attack for you. Like, we're really, really fortunate to have him at the moment. Just to go back to your point on Arsenal, I do think we're going to be in a ding-dong with them for the next few years in a very similar vein. I think what's important for us now is that we need to make sure that we support this group of players that are in their prime with players that are coming through but are of a higher standard than what Arsenal have.
I mean, it looks promising. If you're looking at Kulusevski and you're looking at Bentancur, it seems to be that the recruitment is doing all right at the moment.
Kulusevski, man, I'm so all in on him.
He's a sense of, again, like we were saying about Romero, to be that age and to be, you know, he's the same age as Phil Foden. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting to have that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burnley, I don't want to sort of go on about it too much. It was a disgusting game. But I think one of the things I noticed about it is it's horrible. But I remember thinking this after, I can't remember who they got it across the line with the other day. But, you know, much is made of like Liverpool and their kind of, when they're at their bombastic best. Mm. Oh, that's a nice bit of alliteration.
Ooh, yeah.
But but one of the things I think they probably don't get enough credit for is winning ugly. And I think
finding a way.
Yeah, that is one of the main things I think that Klopp is. Because Liverpool, like, they've always been able to do like the pretty stuff. You know, all those Gerard Suarez years and stuff like that. Where they always fucked up was winning the ugly games. Always.
Do you know who they did it against recently? It was against Newcastle. They won 1-0.
I think that's what I'm thinking of.
At St James's Park.
Yeah, and it was butters. It was a horrible game.
Grotesque. Grotesque, got quite a fortuitous Naby Keita goal after 19 minutes.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Went on the grind for the rest of the game. And that's what we felt like at the weekend.
Yeah.
But once we'd scored, once we got that goal, I was like, yeah, I'm backing us to grind here. Because Conte's got these patterns of play that we're following week in, week out now, that are starting to be, you can see that players are moving into positions subconsciously. They're not overthinking things anymore. They just know exactly where they have to be, at what point. As soon as Hugo Lloris gets the ball played back to him in goal, you see everyone drop into position and you understand the pattern that's about to play out in front of you. And there was a patience there against Burnley that we kept trying to do the right things and kept trying to do the right things. I'm glad that, I mean, obviously it was a stinky penalty that just shouldn't be a penalty, but I will make the point that no one from a Burnley point of view knows the pain of conceding a penalty in the 23rd second of a Champions League final.
No, this is it. I'll never have sympathy for anyone for that. Never. No. Like, never. And no. And also, like, yeah, it's a shit penalty, but it's still a penalty. We've had those given against us.
Eric,
like,
Dyer,
other than
Steve
that one.
Castle,
exactly.
When back was turned and it hit his hand.
We've seen plenty of teams having those go against. And I just thought, whatever, it's Burnley's prerogative. They're trying to stay in the league and everything. But the whole, like, you know, fracas in the tunnel at half time. So just grow up, lads. You wouldn't have been doing that if you'd have got on that. You know, it's just how it happens every now and again. And I, you know, this is one of those things that always rankles me a bit, actually, because I don't tend to do it really at all when Spurs get a poor decision go our way, because I always see it as it generally does even itself out. It's really frustrating, and there are some that are farcical in the, you know, for example, remember Sheffield United, the ball hitting Moura's arm when he was lying on the, after he'd been fouled, you know, and that meant we had a goal chalked off, and subsequently the rules changed. Yeah, I'll moan about ones like that every now and again. But, you know, when you see these kind of like pre-match previews that we've both worked on, do you know what I mean, for online publishers, and you see kind of like the representatives from each club going on about, well, you got this dodgy penalty and it's just a bit boring, isn't it?
They're football flat earthers, mate. Yeah. The ones that come out with that chat around there's a conspiracy against us, that this only happens to us.
This is what us have been doing all week. Have you seen it? Some of the stuff. Do you see, they were talking about, you know, the FA need to investigate the fact that Tottenham were pumping artificial crowd noise into the stadium in the North London Derby to intimidate the players. Yes, mate. That is honestly a thing.
Did they struggle with lockdown then, when the crowd noise was being pumped in on every single game, and we had to play like music after the goals? I mean, like, come on, it's not, it's the same for everyone. I think one of the things that people forget is that, because it's like you said earlier, Ron, football fans' memories are incredibly short. You basically, as I just proved when I couldn't remember who on earth we beat the other week, like you're so present and in the moment. And you're, like, for me now, all I can think about is, right, we need to go and get a point against Norwich to get Champions League. 3 weeks ago, when we had dropped a couple of points, two games on the spin, it feels like the world's falling apart. It feels like everything's falling down. But people are so incapable at the moment of just removing themselves from a situation and sort of looking at it for what it is. Like, the reality is, you'll get, over the course of the season, probably 10 dodgy decisions go against you, and you'll get 10 dodgy decisions that go for you. It just is unlucky for Arsenal and other, like Burnley, that those decisions have sort of, they've happened to go against them at a time of the season when it really, really matters. But like, one other thing that I just want to point out on Arsenal, sorry to go back to this again.
Please do.
Let's not forget, that's possibly one of the worst Chelsea performances I've ever seen when they played Arsenal. When they played Man United, Bruno Fernandes, who was Mr. Consistent from the spot last season, and Cristiano Ronaldo deciding that he didn't want to take the penalty, obviously for very understandable reasons, but then Bruno Fernandes stepping up and missing. Leeds having a complete meltdown, and Luke Ayling deciding to get sent off after 20 minutes. West Ham having to rest a load of players and not really play a very physical brand of football because they had the second leg of a Europa League semi-final coming up directly after they played Arsenal. Like, they had a lot of things go their way. They had a lot of things go their way in the build-up to the North London derby. They also then made the decisions on the day that cost them. You'll be surprised to hear my sympathy is quite minimal.
Well, that's it. When all is said and done, you turned up at Tottenham and you lost 3-0. And you could have won it. You could have won it, and you could have walked home with the Champions League then. But, you know, you haven't. And I don't know. It's all on Norwich now, though. This is the thing. And people are automatically going to say, "Oh, you're being pessimistic. You're being typical Tottenham fan." But we're not there yet. And you know, if there's, I get it. I know people say, not this team, not this Tottenham, not this what Conte. We don't know what this team is yet. We don't know what Conte has turned this team into yet. He hasn't had enough time. We're seeing seeds of change, but that doesn't mean we're there yet.
Have you changed on Conte? Have you sort of moved a bit on Conte from where you kind of were before?
Well, I think my perspective has always been that he's been a great manager. I just don't like his kind of bullshit. And his bullshit subsided a bit. Because I have got this on the on the list, and I think the thing that's encouraging is that he's finally, you know, he's at least his outwards, should we say, what he's putting out into the world at the moment is that he's happy, that he feels at home. You know, a lot of the stuff he was saying after the North London derby was very encouraging, and I just wonder, I don't know, you know, I wonder if, because I'm pretty sure a couple of years back, Madrid passed up on him. You've had United pass up on him this summer. I do wonder if somebody, his agent or whoever, you know, after that Burnley thing, which was, I mean, love him. Anybody that loves him that wants to dig me out of saying that, everybody has to admit that it was disgraceful the way he behaved after that Burnley game. It was. I mean, there's been dramatic and there's been kind of passionate and all this stuff. But to go out after your team's just lost, this is the Burnley away game. I mean,
was it 1-0 Ben Mee scored right at the end?
And he's saying, well, so I'm going to speak to the chairman. Maybe I'm not the right man for this job. And you know, come on, mate. Like that's you're a Premier League manager. To me, it's pushing it a bit much. And I just wasn't here for that stuff. I wasn't here for the excuses, for the, you know, I put it as like, mate, keep your emotions in check a bit, you know?
Well, do you know what's really interesting? Sometimes after Spurs lose, I go into these weird, and I shouldn't do this, it's horrendously immature, but I have no control of my feelings when I'm watching Spurs. It's just one of those things in life that will probably never change for as long as I live. But when Spurs lose, sometimes in my mind, I'm like, right, bring on the pain. Like, right, everything is a disaster. The entire world's burning down. Give it all to me. And I want an avalanche of just negativity because I feel so rubbish about the fact that Spurs have lost.
It's just been attracted to the chaos. It's moth to the flame, isn't it?
You can't help it because you feel so rubbish about the fact that it's like a game that you should win. And as a fan, you're sort of sitting there and being like, just sort of like, I'm sort of like you. I was saying at the beginning of the pod, I just want someone to tell me I'm scum at that point. Just literally.
Do you know what's an interesting one? I think a lot of people, like as a parallel, I think a lot of people got this after Brexit. And I don't want to go too deep on this one because
you're right.
When Brexit happened, people were like, right, that's it. The country's going to burn down. Everything's fucked. We're all dead. Right, bring it on, bring on the petrol. And it's like, I get it. I get why people are anxious about it and stuff. I didn't want it to happen. And I feel a lot of the kind of worry about this stuff, but it's not going to get us anywhere to literally like just write everything off constantly.
Everything's fucked. We can't do anything like, to it. Yeah.
And we've got to try and like, come on, you know?
Yeah. That led to the rise of the fan channels, right? That feeling led to the rise of the fan channels because when you lose, you want to vent. And when you win, you want to see the meltdown of the people that are venting. So like you can't, it's such a visceral and instant reactionary thing. But I suppose the difference is for us, we hold ourselves to such a low bar as fans in terms of like how we're supposed to feel. Like you almost as a fan, you reserve the right to just react in the moment.
Mm.
You know, you reserve the right as a fan to just be you in that moment, obviously not take it too far. And I'm, you know, my thoughts on kind of like the kind of fan cam style tearing people apart just because they've had a rough afternoon in central midfield or whatever. I suppose the difference is that when you're the manager, people need you to, like, from the outside, you need to feel like, well, don't worry because it's under control. Like you need that. But it was one of the things Pochettino was always very good at, I thought, in that he used to say, I'm going to go away and watch the video. Like, I'm going to go away and watch the entire game back.
Do you mean the video?
The video. I'm going to go into my office full of lemons and watch the video.
Yeah. I think it's and I, you know what, I think when I've, because I have been thinking about it a lot lately and how I'm kind of at with content and stuff. And I think, you know, one of the other things I think that I would probably raging against as well is like, it's a kind of, he's obviously the personification of it, but it's a lot of our fans as well, kind of, I don't know, just having that kind of like, please boss, you know, like please don't leave us, please, you know, it's this kind of we're not worthy type thing where it's like, come on, like
I know what you're getting at there, because it's that the implication of that would be that somehow Spurs are not a big enough draw, you know, that's. But one of the things that Rafa van der Vaart said in one of the pre-match things that that we did with him was that whenever he played for Spurs against Arsenal, he understood that to the fans, whether you wanted to accept it or not, Spurs is the biggest club in the world. To your fans, like, the game against Arsenal is the biggest game for the biggest club. So you better understand it. You better get why fans are so passionate. And that's why every time he scored against Arsenal, he used to go absolutely mad, because he wanted to be a fan on the pitch. He wanted to kind of show that he understood it. And I think we as Spurs fans all feel that way. We all feel like, well, we've got this massive stadium now. We've got unbelievable training facilities. We know our history. We know we've got the history of being a big club. We are a big draw, you know, and you want to feel like...
It's a great job. It's one of the best jobs in the world now. It is, in world football.
Undeniably.
I can't remember somebody... I think it was Adam Nathan on Twitter was saying, you know, it's probably outside of the very top 10, it's the best job in the world.
It totally is. But I suppose on the flip side, the thing that we get, and I know you and I have chatted about this before, is that... if you're bought in on the sort of the roller coaster of having a manager at the club who will wear his heart on his sleeve, if you're bought in, it will really work for you. If you're bought in on the idea of him doing the kind of like the Conte cam vibes, the idea of him G'ing up the crowd, it's really, really, really going to work for you. And I guess in 2022, a lot of people want to see that kind of very, very visual sort of style of management, right? They want
to... Yeah, look at Klopp, look, you know, even Arteta does it as well, to be fair to him, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been quite interesting watching Ancelotti this season, isn't it? Like, sort of seeing him on the side look very, very calm and composed when his side are pulling off these unbelievable feats in Europe of turning games around and finding a way to get over the line, like particularly against City. The fact that he was just stood there with the kind of fish hook in his eyebrow, just chilling as they were taking City apart. But I think the thing with Conte, like I was saying, the emotional stuff, the kind of passion thing, I think you don't get one without the other. And so whilst you totally enjoy it while it's going well at the moment, you also understand that it comes with when it's a rough day, when it's a tough day, that it's going to feel a little bit more heavy. I suppose for us now, the hope is that we do enough to make sure we get over the line on Sunday, get into the Champions League, and then the vast, vast majority of next season is us having good days and us all being able to enjoy the kind of the emotional nature of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if I explain
time.
That?
Like, yeah,
I
big time. I mean, I do... I'm getting there. I'm not bought into it. I'm not going to lie about it. I don't feel a lot of love for him yet. I don't. I just don't know how much I can trust him yet. I think that's what a lot of it comes down to. But, you know, it's great. It's great what we're doing so far, and long may it continue. Because go on, mate.
Well, no, I was just saying, for the record, I totally get as well that I'm in this very strange position. I think it probably irks, it might irk some Tottenham fans at some point, in that I'm on match days, for example, sometimes I will interview the manager or we'll speak to players, and it's my job always to ensure that we're in the right frame of mind and that we make sure we're authentic and honest. But at the same time, like, I want to make sure on match days that I'm just 100% behind whatever is needed in order to get us over the line. And I imagine that's quite tough, because it like some people might feel that would mean that you wouldn't give the kind of most authentic version of yourself. But at times it also is quite liberating, because it allows you to be completely blindly following something, you know. It's one of the things that I found has been really nice this season, in that, like, I've gone deeper in my support for Spurs than I ever have.
But
and that comes,
I guess, so, yeah. Well, it's just because, but the thing is, you were a fan in the stands before this, right? I mean, whatever, you might get the odd troll and stuff, being, oh, just some presenter or whatever, but you're not. Like, you were a fan. You've been a Tottenham fan. You're, like, the reason why we're mates is we were Spurs fans that weren't together, and we could talk about it. You know, we've gone to games together, a lot of games together and stuff.
One of my favourite things of all time, you know? after you and I had met for the first time, like, sort of talking about potentially working together, and then the next time I saw you was walking out of Wembley absolutely sloshed. Yeah. And you said to your missus, like, that potentially is someone I'm going to be in a team with in about 3 months' time, and he's just seen me absolutely hammered.
I think it was it after the Chelsea game as well?
We just lost 2-1 to Chelsea.
Yeah, and I was raging. I was so drunk. And raging, and I was like, oh, hi, Ben. Yeah, and then I was just like, so sharp, that's Ben who interviewed me like 2 weeks ago, so I don't think I'm getting that job.
Oh, that's so good.
As I was all like red faced and like fucking proper shouting, sort of kicking angry. The ground, and just like,
and it had started raining as well. Yeah, it was like a gorgeous day, and then it started hammering down. With
that was a miserable game as well, wasn't it? I think it was, Alonso? Did he score?
Yeah, he scored twice, and Hugo let one through him. After all this big talk up, I've given Hugo, let him right through him at the near post. But this is why now it's so enjoyable having had the week that we've just had, because you're carrying all of that stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's all these little experiences we've had on match days over the course of the past however long. Like, we're carrying all of that scar tissue. So to get to enjoy... I remember so many people were saying before the Burnley game, they were like, yeah, we beat Arsenal, but this is the game where we throw it. Or this is the game where we draw 1-0 with Burnley or draw 0-0. It's so nice to get through those two games and buck the script. Not buck against it.
This is it, though. This is the test now. It's in our hands. I know it's a Norwich team that has nothing to play for, but that can go against you as well. You know, it's a Norwich team that, again, that seems to weirdly just hate us.
Why?
These weird teams that hate us, but remember in that FA Cup game? They just took such... I mean, obviously, winning away at a bigger club is great. It's great to have that in the FA Cup as a scout, but there was a weird kind of level of hatred for us from them as well. Again, I think in part it might be down to the fact, I remember one of my mates who's actually a Norwich fan said that it's one of those bizarre facts that Tottenham in the Premier League is actually like Norwich's closest home game.
You're joking.
I think that might still be the truth.
So that's like the easiest one for them to actually get up for.
I think so. I think it's I think that is their closest away game. Like, they're the nearest club to them. I'm not sure if it's as the crow flies or as by transport goes, but it's one of those bizarre like pub quiz type facts that
isn't that crazy that you can
take away. Yeah.
We seem to have that with so many teams though, don't we? This kind of like odd thing where they're like, they want to get one over on
Leicester.
Spurs.
Leicester beat us to the title and they still hate us. Like, won, lads, give it up.
West Ham, like, they can't wait for the game against
Southampton.
Spurs. I don't get it. Like, what to me, when I see the West Ham fixture, I'm like, oh yeah, big London derby. That's it. Like, there's no, it's not like I think like, oh God, this is a game that we have to be up for, otherwise it's all going to fall apart. Whereas, like, for some reason, West Ham see it as like the biggest game in the calendar.
Honestly speaking, I mostly get the joy from beating West Ham because of all the sort of off-pitch, the racist stuff that they do. I'm like, this will hurt those tossers. You know, that element in their crowd, like, that will hurt them. And so I'm like, yes, good. You know, especially when it's Son who scores against them all the time. Son, who's been like victim of like targeted abuse from them on several occasions. I just love the fact that he is so up for that game. And yeah, of course he is, you know.
It's such a strange thing though, isn't it? The kind of idea that somehow... I think, do you know what it is? I think it's probably because we're tangibly close to these teams. We're that team that has kind of climbed out of the swamp, as it were.
We were there with Everton, with Newcastle, with Aston Villa. And we've put our heads... As Flav always says, to paraphrase from him, we've put our heads above the parapet. You know, and as soon as you do that, people start taking shots at you. And it's true. You know, it rankles people. It annoys all of us when Liverpool do that. It means more. They're mawkish shit. But as I've sort of been banging on about today on Twitter, the reason why it rankles me is because I get it. I get what they do. I mean, yeah, they are a super club. They have a lot of money. But the way they're competing against the likes of Manchester City, PSG, it's amazing, and it's credit to Klopp, and it's credit to what they're doing, because it feels... I would die for the success that Liverpool are having. Do I feel envious of what Manchester City are doing? Not for a second.
No, I
not for a second. I couldn't care less.
It doesn't hurt me.
No,
watching Man City win.
I don't care. When I see them lift the Premier League title, it's almost like a void season. And I know, you know, you'll have the likes of Boovy that will say, Boovy, a mutual friend of ours who's a big Manchester City fan, who would just say you're just saying it because it's sour grapes.
No,
you're rattled.
It's not true.
I couldn't care less. I honestly couldn't care less when Manchester City do it. I really don't care. But when Liverpool do it, it hurts.
But you know it why hurts. That is. You know it's because that
because you sort of think could we have been could us. Be there.
It know? Could be us.
Just
yeah.
be there. What I tell you, one thing I did want to end it on a positive going up to this. Heung-min Son, player of the season.
Oh, man.
I mean, a lot is made of Harry Kane. I think you know Harry Kane is a player on another planet. Like he's on another stratosphere. But Heung-min Son he's orbiting with him. You know, like he's up there, and I'm not entirely convinced that Harry Kane is Harry Kane without Heung-min Son either.
No, totally.
But in his own right, Heung-min Son is, you know, he's up there with Bale, with Modric, with Berbatov, with Ginola now. Like he's comfortably in that pantheon of the best players Tottenham have ever had. And the fact now, I mean, we don't know what Mo Salah's injury is at the moment, how long it's going to keep him out for.
2 goals against Norwich.
The opportunity's there for Heung-min Son to have probably, I think, the most well-deserved golden boot. I don't want to take anything away from the ones that Harry Kane has won, but it's you know, as we normalise Harry Kane's brilliance, it's almost like it's a given. It's like, well, Harry Kane should be doing that. Mo Salah should be doing that, you know? With a player like Heung-min Son, it's like this is almost like the affirmation to, I guess, to other fan bases. Like, see, we're not just chatting shit. This lad is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he does have to operate in Kane's. I sort of made this point a few weeks ago. He's sort of unlucky in the fact that he's in this Tottenham team at the same time as Harry Kane. In a way, even though I think they are the most iconic duo now. Those two, the most successful Premier League duo of all time. And you can say that now, because they are. He is kind of unlucky in a sort of sense that he's playing alongside Kane because he is forever in Kane's shadow. But he shouldn't be, because he's just... And at the start of this season, when whatever was going on with Harry Kane and he wasn't at the races, Heung-min Son stepped up, as he often has done. Manchester City away in the Champions League. It was Heung-min Son's show. And this crunch part of the season, he has been just a man that you can absolutely rely on. You can tell they adore, everybody in the club adores him. They just absolutely are. I don't need to tell you this. You work with him consistently. Like, but just from the outside, you can see everybody loves him. I remember Tommy, another one of our mates who used to work at the club, was just like, you cannot underestimate the effect that having somebody like Son at the club
is. Unbelievable.
He's like, I think Tommy even described him as an angel. He was just like, there's something about him. He has an aura. Every time around him, you just feel happy because he's just such a great guy. And like, everybody's there for him. And to see him like get it, to see him actually get that, I think even like, probably your layer of Liverpool fans just outside the most hardened would probably be hard pressed to feel too begrudged if Son took the golden boot over Salah.
No,
you know,
and it's not the other thing that's so important to understand. It's not disingenuous. Like, he genuinely is that nice. He genuinely is that guy. And if you think about any kind of team that you've ever been a part of, in any walk of life, so whether that be like work or whether that's a Sunday league or whether that's like sort of just even down to things like hobbies that you might have when you're in a team, you cannot overstate how important it is to have that guy in the group that everyone is able to laugh along with. Like, to have that guy in the group that just brings constant good energy that no one ever feels like they can't talk to. Because you've all been in those places where you sort of think, oh God, that person makes me a bit uncomfortable, or I don't really know if I sort of trust them, or I don't really know if I'm kind of like able to be the full version of myself around them. Can you imagine anyone ever feeling around Sonny like they couldn't be themselves, or they couldn't just have a chat and have a laugh and kind of have a smile on their face? That's so huge over the course of an intense 9-10 month campaign and going down to the wire, going down to the final day of the season, he's still got the same energy that he had at the beginning of the season as well. I think he's one of those ones, like you said, that we'll look back on and wish that we appreciated more while we had him. What was it? Is it 7 seasons now? And he's done 40 games plus in every single season that he's been with us. And now he's scoring all that. He's scoring at such a consistent rate for someone that doesn't play as an out-and-out centre-forward. Like, we're lucky to have him. Do you remember last summer when we did a pod and we were talking about needing to appreciate Harry Kane, like, regardless of what happens, we need to appreciate that what this guy is doing. Like, he's doing things that we as Spurs fans may not see again in our lifetime, may not see a player of his level of quality. Son is fast approaching that. You know, we are so lucky to have this player at our club. We're so lucky to have a player that puts up the numbers that he puts up, is the character he is on and off the pitch. And at the same time, he absolutely adores Spurs. Like, there are players all over the world that are complete mercenaries and just turn out a performance for their team and then go away and they get paid to play. Son couldn't be further from that. He loves the club. He loves being at Spurs. He just signed a new contract. Like, we have to appreciate him. Like, we've got to appreciate him.
He could have gone to any club in the world.
Anywhere.
Any club in the world would have had him. Madrid, any of them. Even Liverpool would have.
Anywhere.
And maybe not now with Diaz, but they would have still taken him. You know, like,
if you said to Liverpool now, Son is available this summer, there is no way, even with the players that they've got, I think Liverpool would probably look and be like, yeah, we'll let Salah go. We've got this question over kind of like whether like Mo Salah's going to stick around at Liverpool. If they knew that they had potentially the opportunity to sign Son, I'm sure they would. People would barely bat an eyelid. He would get into City, he'd get into Real Madrid, he'd get into Barcelona's team. Like, we're so privileged to have this guy at the club. He's unbelievable and he loves being at the club. Like, I really, really hope. And I know, obviously, the fact that he won Player of the Year means that people do get it. And I mean, he wins it all the time. But he's so talented, and even when he's a bit patchy, his patches now are like a game, a couple of games. You know, that it's not like he's running 10 games without putting him in an incredible performance. And he's becoming so clutch in big games as well. Like, sorry, I'm honestly, this is just ode to Sonny now, but he's such a wonderful player. We have to appreciate what we've got whilst we've got it. There'll be a time, as there is in every football supporter's kind of up and down peaks and troughs, there'll be a time in at some point in the future where Spurs are not where they are now. There'll be a time where we're not challenging for the Champions League and we're not pushing on to get top four. And we'll be looking and being like, oh God, if only we had a player up front who could score goals and still be creative and works hard. And at that point, people were like, do you remember how good Sonny was? I just think at the moment, we have to realise what we've got while we've got it.
Mate, I'm gonna put you it's not that awkward a position, but I'm going to tap you up for your insider knowledge ahead of this game, this Norwich game. What's the vibe like within the hive, mate? How is it? How's everyone feeling? And, you know, Conte seems like a guy, for everything I've said about him, he seems like a guy that he won't be, you know, Tottenham fans are jubilantly kind of goading Arsenal now. He won't be doing that, right? He'll know there's a job to do still. The job isn't done yet. And we got to go. We got to go up there, and we got to win.
Yeah. Do you know what? So the other day, I spoke with Lucas, Sonny, and Hugo after the game.
As you do,
and
you
know. And I was like, I mean, they all of them. That man, I don't know. The energy was phenomenal after the Burnley game. Like it was. I don't know how to put it, considering that it was such a strange game, that possibly it could have been relief, but also you just felt, I don't know, it just felt like, it felt like a bit of a sea change. You know, it felt like we had completely flipped the momentum, and realistically, Arsenal should have gone and got the job done at Newcastle, but it just felt like there was this belief just completely emanating out of all of them that that, yeah, we got to go and do the job at Norwich, but just there was such faith in what they were doing, which is amazing. I mean, when you compare it to the beginning of the season, I don't want to shit on Nuno or be disrespectful to Nuno, because I think when you look back, it was an incredibly difficult sort of situation for him to come into and for him to try and get things right in a very short period of time. I'm sure it was really tough. But if you just compare how things are now with how things were when Nuno moved on, it couldn't feel more different. Like, it feels that the energy is just so, so good. There's such a belief in what they're doing as well. And it's across the board. Like, there's such buy-in now. So, I mean, after the game, they're all saying the same thing. It's go and just get the job done. But there's no trepidation there, which is lovely. It makes you feel as a fan, like, we don't need to carry any of that sort of nervous energy. It's just like, no, they'll go and get the job done, go and be professional. And again, one of the huge positives of Antonio Conte's brand of football is everyone knows their job, everyone knows what they have to do, and it doesn't allow for this kind of, it doesn't allow for the super, like, the huge fluctuations. Do you know, I always felt with Pochettino in that, like, we were running on emotion a lot of times, and I loved it. I absolutely adored it. But there was big fluctuations, wasn't there? That sometimes you felt like at 3-0 up, the mood could change quite quickly because we were quite an emotional side. It's starting to feel a little bit more cold at the moment. Still plenty of emotion in the team, still plenty of emotion on the touchline. But in terms of the way we go about business, it's a little bit more cold and a little bit more calculated, a little bit more ruthless and clinical. And so, I mean, I don't want to now give it the kiss of death, but I just feel like going into this weekend, people just know what they've got to do. And I really feel like we're going to get over the line. And fingers crossed, we're sitting here on Monday and we're absolutely buzzed. I can't wait to listen to the Champions League theme tune again. If we get it done, mate, just I'll be listening to that on repeat over and over and over. How special will that be? Champions League nights back at the stadium.
Tingling, mate. Honestly, to me, it's, other than the World Cup, it's the most incredible form of football. I never, ever take it for granted. I always dreamed, honestly, as a kid growing up, even as an adult, that Tottenham would one day maybe make the Champions League. And we had that with the, you know, crouch at the Etihad when we beat them to it. And I just thought, this is it. This is the peak. This is the peak of what we're going to get. And it's amazing. And I'm happy with that. And
if we get over the line, do you think we'll remember the Arsenal game in the same way?
What, the 3-0?
Yeah.
I think it's everything. It's glorious. And I think it could be a... I don't want to overstate it too much, but I do think it is... It's a potentially, like... It's a branch in the timeline, right? I think history looks very different either way that fixture goes. And it's huge. There are just some games, right, that are just like that. And there was a lot resting on that. And the fact that we are now going from the start of this season, like you were talking about, that feels like another lifetime ago now. And it really does. It feels like something completely alien to what we're in now. The fact that we're potentially staring down the barrel of going back into the Champions League is everything. It's everything. This is, you know, Tottenham, maybe we don't have the same heritage as a Liverpool, an AC Milan, a Real Madrid, but we are still, compared to 99% of clubs in this country, we have heritage in Europe, and we're a European club. We are, and it's where we belong. We belong in the, you know, under the lights, midweek, White Hart Lane,
all playing, in white.
Exactly, playing Europe's finest, and I live for it. I absolutely live for it, and the fact that we might be there again is everything. So I can't get too excited about it yet, because we're so close, and I just, yeah, like you say, Sunday afternoon is going to be a very interesting way, like in a very interesting afternoon, whatever way you look at it, it's going to be massive.
That feeling, mate. If we do get over the line on Sunday, that fit, like, you'll have, it will be, do you remember after you finish like your A-levels and you got like a 4-month summer where you just go out and get pissed all the time and go to house parties, and before you went to uni and everyone was just buzzing to kind of hang out together? That's what, if Spurs get over the line, that's what our summer will be.
Yeah.
It'll just be total optimism and like everyone just excited to see what comes next season, with the knowledge that there's going to be, I mean, one of the big things for me, can't wait to be singing "Oh What a Night" watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night again. I mean, like, what a treat that's going to be as well. Spurs are at the Bernabeu, Arsenal watching Emmerdale vibes. That would just be, oh man, I can't wait.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.